The next case is 00470 Jack and Dave Paletti versus Brian E. Dave Paletti. Mr. Schmidt.
Thank you, sir. Good morning, Your Honor. Any of these minimum contact cases, there's a duration component, and there is an act I call an activity of conduct component. In the duration,
Counselor, before you get into all that, could you help us understand exactly the status of the parties at this point? You see, I understand that the divorce is not in question.
Yes, that's right.
It's just the support issues?
Yes.
That's left in this view.
The personal jurisdiction issues in this case. In these cases, whether they're Kansas or Indiana or Ohio, there's a duration element and then there's an activity element. And the duration element, for example, in the Brown, Kansas, the Kansas Supreme Court found that Willie Brown tried to go on Kansas Road shopping in Kansas stores. He said, I haven't been in contact with Kansas, but they said that happened over 3 years. So Willie Brown didn't do much over 3 years. But the cumulative effect was that Kansas found in contact. In most of the cases, they are activity cases. They are conduct cases. And the focus is on what is the defendant's conduct. The International Shoe says, we look at quality and nature of conduct. Well, what does nature of conduct mean? What does quality of conduct mean? Was the conduct systematic? Was it continuous? Was it regular? Or was it casual? Was it isolated? In this case, Brian DePaulty was in Ohio for 1 week. His conduct during that week, when he negotiated, and I forget the exact number, at $60,000 to $80,000 house, he negotiated that he was a purchase contract. His conduct during that week was regular. It was systematic. It was continuous. It was offer, rejection, counteroffer, acceptance, positive earnest money. As a result, the contract formed. Brian DePaulty was the equitable owner of this real estate. He was the contractual owner of this real estate.
Was he living in a marital relationship within the state?
Absolutely. He lived here with Jacqueline. They lived here
for how long?
For 1 week.
1 week.
They worked together. They looked for a house. They negotiated together to purchase a house. They acted as husband and wife. This was not investment property. This was a house to live in as husband and wife together.
Then he left on a trip and never returned. Went to Japan, I guess, never returned.
Yes.
And that's living in a marital relationship within the state. You think that's what the rule contemplates?
Well, the issue is, what was the quality and nature of his conduct?
Did he buy the house? Did they live in the house?
Yeah.
He didn't. They did not close on the house.
They never lived in it?
No, they didn't.
When you say then Brian claimed that Jacqueline have the house in the event of his death, desired the seller's deed convey title to Brian and Jacqueline in joint survivorship form. When I got all the way through that, it sounded to me like they closed the house, got a joint survivorship deed, and then I get to the next brief and said they never even closed it.
On the purchase contract, the working purchase contract, a survivorship form is how Brian and Jacqueline desired to hold title.
Yeah, it always is. At the bottom of the form, it says, how do you want to take title?
Exactly.
But they never closed this, apparently.
Exactly.
You never tell us that in your brief, do you?
No.
You just sort of stop there. You say they agreed to have it conveyed to Brian and Jacqueline in joint survivorship form.
But it should be clear that they negotiated this contract. It should be clear that Brian never lived in this home.
They lived in a hotel or a motel room, didn't they?
They lived at the Officers Club.
Officers Club. Better than a motel room. But that's living in the marital relationship in the state for 1 week while they were attempting to purchase a house.
Well,
I think that's what the rule contemplates.
I think the rule contemplates what is the quality and nature of your activity. Was your activity systematic, regular, continuous? If Bill Gates comes into Columbus for one day and says, Melissa, let's live here in Columbus, and he buys the Columbus Center and he puts down $20 million down payment, at the end of the day he says, no, I think I've changed my mind. That is massive contact with the state of Ohio. And it's not minimal in my mind, that is massive. What is at issue here, in my opinion, is Brian's, I have 200,000 miles on my car. $80,000 is a massive amount of money to me. When Brian DePaula comes into Ohio and negotiates an $80,000 contract, that is massive contact with Ohio.
Do we have to, I think I know what your answer would be, but it occurred to me that maybe you were asking us to change the legal test for the so-called long-arm statute. Would you argue no?
No. I think the test is what was the quality and nature of the defendant's conduct. And Willie Brown in Kansas didn't do much, but his cumulative did over 3 years. He maintained a contact with Kansas. We live in a point-and-click world. We live in a dot-com world. Someone can, with a click, point and click, and buy $1 million piece of artwork on eBay. That creates massive contact with that state.
We're saying the duration, the nature,
the deal.
I think both are issues, and where we find minimum contacts and not much activity, we have a long duration.
Okay. I like the vacation in my home. Go there frequently with my spouse. Like it so much, I look at real estate. Under your definition, would Wyoming have jurisdiction over me, or would it relate to the nature of the contact? For example, if I went in and started negotiating with the realtor or with the property owner and then walked away, and some dispute arose over that, might there be long-arm jurisdiction for purposes of that particular transaction, but not for anything else?
Yes, that's a transaction business matter.
Right. So here it's, shouldn't the focus be, if you're going to have jurisdiction, on exactly what the nature of the marital, this is a marital dispute, what the nature of the marital contract.
And everything Brian DePaula did was marital. He looked for this home with his wife. He wanted to live in it with his wife. He negotiated the contract with his wife. Everything he did was marital. This is not a situation where they came in as husband and wife and essentially he did his part of his life. We're not going to live in every marital home. Everything this man did.
So the critical thing is not that they looked at a home, but that because it had been an investment, would you still have the reach of the long-arm statute?
I think it's a much weaker case if it were an investment. I think the in my opinion, everything that these two parties did is marital in nature. The second court, and I say this humbly in great respect to the Second District Court of Appeals, said this was just preliminary. This was just, he was looked for, this was not a case where they drove around in an open office. This was a case where their conduct was substantial.
Beyond the shopping for a house, what else had transpired in that form that indicated some intent to have this be the marital resident of the parties?
The record in this case from the trial court should reflect that Brian was to retire. He was moved. Jacqueline got a job at Wright-Patterson. And so Jacqueline's going to get a new job. Brian's going to retire. They came to Ohio. They said, where do you want to live? Let's look around. And had they not had any contact with Ohio and just had left to go back to Wyoming and say, hey, listen, Beaver Heights is a great place. Let's buy a house there someday. But those aren't our facts.
What was the status of the new employment relationship at the time they came to Ohio? Did she sign a contract?
It was, I don't know if she signed a contract, but it was not a lessee to get a job by cat. She was offered the job. She accepted the job. She works there today.
Had she terminated her employment elsewhere?
It was as I understand it, a lateral move from where she worked for the federal government.
And how irrevocable was the job change situation when they were in Ohio?
How irrevocable?
Yeah. I mean, how has she...
She had accepted the job. She was moving to Ohio.
She could not have gone back home and said, I really hated Dayton. There's anything about my life. I'm staying here. I mean, was that...
I don't know. I just don't know. I do know that she accepted this job in Dayton, Ohio. And I know, in my opinion, down south, that she was going to make Ohio home. Brian was going to make Ohio his home.
And that's all of the record.
I'm sorry?
And that's all of the record.
Yes, sir. I hope.
Mr. Schmidt, let me take you to the rule 4.3A. The definition of person, as you know, says it includes individuals, corporations, so forth, and then partnership, association, or any other legal or commercial entity who, acting directly or by an agent, has caused an event to occur out of which the claim that is the subject of the complaint arose. Here, there's no complaint arising out of their transaction for the house, is there? This is an action for support, isn't it?
It is. But I think when Brian sorted inherits substantial rights and protections in Ohio, had he had the deal fallen through, for a better case, let's say the deal had closed, the real estate is rezoned, he sells it. If there's any money coming out of this deal, that is a marital matter. I think everything they did in Ohio, is had he died, that's what in Montgomery County probate court, it would have been on, exactly what it was at real estate, not a contractual matter, not a personal property, real estate.
And your argument is that then somehow affects the application here, the motion here for support that he hasn't paid. That
I desire the court to find that he has maintained minimum contacts with Ohio, so that our court can assert personal jurisdiction and orders.
Thank you. Mr. Schulte.
Justice, and may please court. My name is Richard Schulte. I'm here today on behalf of Brian DePaulty. I think the issue before the court today is a very simple one. This court, in 1994, Prince versus Mr. K. Foods, laid down a clear test for applying minimum context to determine whether it's a personal jurisdiction or an individual. This case can be decided on the face of the statute. Ohio Civil Rule 4.3a, subsection 8, clearly states that Mr. and Mrs. DeBalti must live in a marital relationship in the state of Ohio. In this case, Mr. DeBalti and Mrs. DeBalti came here for a 7-day period. That was it. Neither of them lived here before, during, or after that visit.
Where was jurisdiction in process? In Wyoming, where they neither lived anymore?
At that time, I believe jurisdiction would be proper for personal jurisdiction purposes of buying the property in Wyoming. It's important to note.
What about for child support? Children aren't there anymore. They now live in Ohio. Did she have gotten child support to establish in Wyoming?
At that time, I believe so, Your Honor. And there's one important issue to note.
Well, even though neither lives in Wyoming anymore, both have moved from Wyoming to Ohio and Japan, they would have been forced to go back to the Wyoming courts to get all of this property division of child support. And your client would not have caught that as having lacking jurisdiction because she doesn't live.
I think what we need to focus on, Your Honor, is that there's certain tests that must be met before personal jurisdiction can be met. There was also a pending divorce proceeding going forward in Wyoming at the time.
We can't dismiss that, right? We dismissed that before they could come to Ohio, perhaps.
That's correct. But I think it's important to note the record is completely void. Unlike Mr. Schmidt, I do not believe that there's any evidence in the record suggesting that Mr. Paul even intended to move to the state of Ohio. And I think that's important to note.
If he's looking for a house with his wife, that's not intentional.
The record doesn't say that, Your Honor. I can't comment about what was not in the record. But they were in the process of dividing property.
But I think what's being asked is, she's entitled or needs, should have child support. Where does she go, Japan?
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor.
There has to be an answer. Somebody has to have jurisdiction. That's why we have courts, people to access them.
My belief is that it's in Wyoming.
But wait, you said at that time it would be in Wyoming. Today, she finally says, okay, the Supreme Court of Ohio, if it does, says, I don't have any rights here. You say she's gone from Wyoming and he's gone from Wyoming. That leaves her going to some municipal court in Japan to get child support that clearly she ought to have. That's the answer, isn't it?
Well, I think the Supreme Court of the United States has set some clear answers about the power of the court to divide property. And I think there may not be a perfect answer, Your Honor, but the courts have clearly laid down a test that must be met. And this case can be decided simply on the basis of the statute without even getting to the minimum context issues and the due process arguments.
I concede that. So is my answer to my question, she's got to go to Japan?
No.
Or do without?
Well, she did get child support.
Or do without?
Yeah.
I'll take care of this.
The child support issue is moot at this point because the children were emancipated.
No.
They are emancipated, that's right. But
I don't know, Your Honor, if there's some existing treaty. I was not representing
I think in this case, the spouse did get a child support order, did get a divorce, and then after that, the child was emancipated. And I think, I don't know which state that gave the divorce. I thought it was Ohio. But
Ohio did grant the divorce.
Right, and child support.
Granted the divorce, the problem with the actual property.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can always do that. You can get jurisdiction for the divorce, but you just by residency here. It's the issue of child support and property division.
Granted.
We used to go through this all the time, trying to find somebody under this long-arm statute.
I'd just like to point out to the court that even if you can get past the first prong of the test in U.S. versus Mr. K. Booz, I am not aware of any case that would suggest that there's sufficient context here to give an Ohio court jurisdiction over Mr. DeBalti. I point your attention to Coco, which is the United States Supreme Court's court case, where the husband and wife actually lived in California and were married there. The husband even came back for a subsequent 24-hour period to visit California, and the Supreme Court of the United States said that wasn't enough. This is important because that contact in Colco was related to the transaction. In this case, we have a contact that is unrelated to the divorce proceeding. They're there negotiating the real estate purchase, which fell through. The purchase never went through. There's a whole other series of cases where the courts, both here in Ohio and in the United States Supreme Court, say that the contacts are not enough. If you look at Schroeder, which is a second district appellate decision, the person lived in Ohio for a whole year as a student. He met his wife in Ohio. The court said that minimum contacts was not enough. In Huggins v. Huggins, a third appellate district decision, the husband had infrequent and short visits, plus he stayed for a three-month period. That wasn't enough. He had a seven-day visit. That's it. Lastly, I'd like to focus on one issue. If you find that you can get past the first prong, you have to look at the language of international shoe more closely. International shoe says you have to look at the quality, nature of the contacts and whether it's systematic and continuous. And they can't be isolated. A one-week visit is an isolated visit. It's one visit. It's not systematic and continuous. In international shoe, there was a series of repeated business transactions between the parties. This case is much different.
Well, Mr. Schmidt argues that the visit to Ohio to purchase this house was, his words, massive, I guess, but that it was concentrated, that it was continuous, that it was serious, and that it, albeit it was 7 days, but it was an intense 7 days, and that's sufficient. What's your response?
I think you have to look at what the other cases say, and the other cases say that it's not enough, Your Honor. If he had bought the real estate, it might be a different story. If he had actually tendered money and owned the property, but that never happened. The deal never happened. He never lived here. And I want to point out one distinction that the Second District Appellate Court made, and it was essential to their decision, and I think it's one that is important. It made a differentiation between living here and staying here. The Second District said that he was just staying here. He didn't live here much. Neither of them lived together in their relationship in Ohio. I don't think it's a close call.
And to add to the child support issue, generally, when the long-arm section is isolated, you have some focus of interest or something. You did a transaction in Ohio, you did a transaction in Ohio a lot. In a child support case, the children are here. The dispute arises over children and what support is for children, and they are his children living in Ohio. Why shouldn't that be positioned for long-arm reach? Forget the property arguments. We'll talk about children and child support.
I think you bring up a good point, Your Honor. If you look at some of the cases that were cited in the brief, they talk about whether the father had made payments on support in the state, and whether he had come to visit the children, and whether he had participated in that activity.
Why should the long arm depend on what action the father said? Why doesn't it depend on the fact that he is the father, he has a legal interest in that child, he has legal obligations to that child? Why isn't that in and of itself a sufficient legal contact with the state? It's like owning property, you want to get right down to a gross comparison. They are children he has. He's a virtual and has a legal obligation to them. Why doesn't that satisfy longer?
The court decisions have made distinctions about that type of contact that the father has with the children in those different states. And they say that mere fathership is not enough. And one of the reasons that was cited, and I believe it was in the Freiberg decision, they referenced the Kansas decision, and they talked about the fact that they don't want to discourage visits with the children. And if you are to haul a father into court for other litigation or other related litigation issues, it potentially could discourage visiting with the children.
So the answer is that the wife who's going to stay with the child, don't ever see the child, don't visit the child, and they can't issue a child support?
I don't think that's the answer, Your Honor, but I think the courts were struggling with an issue. And the issue is you have to draw some sort of line when it comes to allowing someone to have their due process rights and defend themselves properly in a subsequent state.
Counsel, in interpreting the life of rights along our statute, essentially, it comes down to some practical considerations and justice strategies. Touched on some of those. The flip side, it seems to me, could be if it appeared that Ohio law was attempted to be invoked because his mother had moved here like, you know, for the purpose of form shopping, fine, and because we had very high standards of what was expected in terms of child support and all of that. There's nothing in this record that indicates her presence and the presence of the children in Ohio was motivated by an effort to get the biggest bang for the dollar out of child support.
I'm not aware of anything in the record that would suggest that.
And I'm a little bit amused by what manner of person your client is, whether he's so interested in propositions of constitutional law as it pertains to long-term jurisdiction, that he would hire lawyers to come clear to the Supreme Court rather than just pay out on child support.
There was negotiations that took place in the Wyoming court prior to this, and Mr. DePaulty wasn't even represented in the divorce proceeding in the trial court. Only subsequent to that proceeding did he get an attorney to try to protect his interest in that proceeding. And that's why we have proceeded this way. The last point I'd like to make is that this case should be decided on the face of the statute. I don't think we should be second-guessing the legislatures here. This is a long-tested statute, and it says clearly that they must be living in the marital relationship in the state of Ohio. And whatever way you try to construe the facts, it's simply clear they did not. And then lastly, if you can get by that argument, you have to look at the international shield and the quality and nature of the contacts. And I think it's clear that they're not systematic and continuous, and they seem to be very isolated because it's a one-week visit to this state. They never lived here, and as the Second District Appellate Court said, they stayed here. Thank you for your time. It's a real honor to be here today.
Thank you, Mr. Schulte. Mr. Schmidt, you've saved 1 minute of your time.
Aye.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.